I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Secretary of State Marco Rubio delivers the most poignant words ever spoken about the threat of left-wing extremism. Plus, in Oregon, Christine Drazen is hoping for a historic movement that will help her defeat Governor Tina Kotek. And a Washington coffee stand blasted for a transphobic sign. Is it transphobic? I don't know. We'll discuss. Plus, I quiz golfers on American history. You won't want to miss our closing sanity check. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Wowza, we had like a once-in-a-generation thunderstorm in the Seattle area. It was insane. I was doing a hit with Newsmax earlier, also an interview that we'll play momentarily, and it was like, I didn't know if we'd have a show today. I didn't know if there'd be anything left standing. It was pretty wild. So if we lose power and cut off, now you know why, but I think it's calmed down a little bit. I also hope you stay with us till the end of the show today, our final live show of the week. We're going to have a little fun in our closing sanity check. I had a different sort of plan for the show today. We were going to start by talking about the Oregon governor's race, because I think there's so many Washingtonians who are watching it, just hoping that Republican Christine Drazen can pull off a victory there. But then I saw some remarks from Marco Rubio on an issue I care about perhaps more than anything else. And I just thought, God bless Marco Rubio. They're the most poignant words I've heard spoken on the issue of left-wing extremism. And they happened at the Ministerial on the Resurgence of Political Terrorism. It was hosted by the United States and the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, the U.S. State Department. Representatives from countries across the world were there. And it was to address the rise of far-left political terrorism as a transnational threat, according to the White House, Western Hemisphere, Europe, and Asia, all involved in this to expand coordination, enhance information sharing, and strengthen international law enforcement mechanisms to counter the threat of left-wing extremism. And if you are living on planet Earth and you have a pulse and you can think for yourself, you know that this is an issue. You know that left-wing terrorism and extremism is a real issue. Whether you want to call it Antifa or not, I'm not going to sit here and argue with you about it. But this has been happening for years and years on the West Coast of the United States in particular. And now we're seeing this sentiment expand across the country, expand globally. There's a reason why when you see these left-wing factions, whether they're marching in France or Greece or in New York City or in Seattle, they look the same. They're dressed the same. They're carrying the same flags, they're chanting the same things, and they commit acts of violence and vandalism. And for too long, the Western world has ignored it. For too long, the United States, the press, the Democratic Party has brushed it off or has acted like January 6th was the end-all be-all of political violence in this country, and any other instance of political violence that came after that is therefore null and void. As you know, this is personal for me. I've been assaulted by left-wing radicals on numerous occasions. I have watched and listened as our leaders have sat in silence about it, and I am grateful that the White House under President Trump and now with Marco Rubio are starting to look at this across the world and across the globe and strategize about how to deal with it. And then there's, of course, how the media covers it. This is from MS Now. Rubio launches global effort to target left-wing extremists. It says an international Antifa summit at the State Department is raising concerns that President Donald Trump is expanding a crackdown on left-wing groups. Who is it raising concerns with? Who is it raising concerns with? It's like when the Texas Prairie Land Antifa cell was sentenced, found guilty and sentenced, and some of them got, you know, 50 years in prison. You had Democrats in Congress who came out and they were horrified. Oh, the sentence is too high. The same people who were cheering on lengthy federal prison sentences for nonviolent J6ers. And you've got an Antifa terror cell in Texas and a police officer who was shot in the neck by one of them. And Democrats in Congress think, oh, you shouldn't put them in prison for very long. It shows exactly what their headspace is. But I have to play this clip. It's a little longer, but every second of it is so spot on from Secretary of State Marco Rubio talking about the reality of this threat.
More than 80% of radical violence is now driven by far left and anarchist actors. These are not abstract statistics. Americans have seen what those numbers mean. An all-out assault on our immigration officers, sniper attacks, explosives, armed ambushes, a transgender shooter opening fire on Catholic elementary school students as they pray, his gun marked with slogans like, "Where is your God now?" A healthcare executive executed in cold blood in the streets. Multiple assassination attempts on a sitting president, and the murder of the greatest conservative activist of a generation, a man who happened to also be a husband and the father of two young children, shot and killed while speaking to a crowd of students. This is a distinctive and unique evil. It has always been driven by a hatred, above all else, a hatred for civilization itself. It is a revolt of the worst against the best, a revolt of the weak and the cowardly against the strong and the good. It is perpetrated by those who cannot build, who cannot create, who cannot achieve great things, and take their revenge upon the world for their own inadequacy by seeking to destroy those who can. This is what radical leftism is. It may wear various different slogans and ideologies across place and time. They can call themselves anti-capitalist or anti-imperialist or communist or anarchist or Marxist, but the fundamental character is always the same. It's always the same. It is a poisonous resentment cloaked in the language of equality and justice and liberation, an overwhelming need to tear down what greater men have built, to wreck what is beautiful and what is right on behalf of people who are only filled with ugliness and have nothing else to offer the world. Through violence and through terror, they once again seek to impose their ugliness on all of us.
Wow. I've never heard a better description. And when he says this is the revolt of the worst against the best, a revolt of people who cannot build, who cannot create, who cannot achieve, and they're mad. They're mad at themselves, maybe. They're mad at the world. They're bitter. They're angry. They're hostile. And so they seek to tear down what greater men have built. That is left-wing extremism in a nutshell. And as you know, I went to the White House last year. They had a panel on the domestic threat of Antifa. And Andy Ngo, who is sitting next to me, and he's in London now because the threat against him in Portland was so severe, he literally had to leave the country. He, at the time, was urging the administration to not only declare Antifa a domestic terror organization, but a global terror organization. And I agreed with that. And he pointed out the examples and some of the parity between what's happening in the United States and what's happening abroad. And it's all summed up by what Marco Rubio said there in those final 30 seconds. And, you know, I hope something comes of this. I mean, it sounds like their mission with the summit today is to sort of improve information sharing, to try to track the funding of these organizations. And that's really going to be key. We haven't seen the ability to really do that in a meaningful way in the United States yet. But of course, it's all connected. You look at the anti-ICE movements when one day suddenly in the Midwest, on the East Coast, on the West Coast, all the anti-ICE rioters had sex toys, all of them coming out of boxes. What they just all decided at the same time that that was what they were going to do. And all the sex toys were going to look like the same sex toys. I mean, you have even with the No Kings marches across the country. And I know you have groups like Indivisible that are nationwide groups, but the organization and the funding, I mean, you had these massive, you know, 100 feet long copies of the Constitution. They were parading through the streets in places like Seattle and elsewhere. That doesn't happen overnight. And acts of violence and vandalism that have occurred and occurred during these marches, the people funding those marches are responsible for it. So I saw that and I just was stopped in my tracks when I heard Marco Rubio say that the best description of radical left-wing extremism I've ever heard gets at the heart of what these people are about, the evil that is within them. And just recognizing it and calling it out for what it is a step in the right direction, because we've been dealing with cowardless leaders who pretend it doesn't even exist. I mean, I did an interview with KUOW last year where the host wanted to argue with me that left-wing extremism was more common in the Seattle area than right-wing extremism. And I thought, what freaking planet are you living on? What planet are you living on that you could possibly think that right-wing extremism in the last 10, 15 years in America is anywhere close to what we've seen with radical left-wing extremism? And that was terrifying because that was a member of the press. It's like you have to intentionally be shoving your head in the sand to not realize this threat and how grave it is. So I'm very grateful for Marco Rubio, for the president, for calling this out for what it is, and we'll see what comes of it. All right, you might have seen the headlines. A Republican with a slight lead in the race for governor in Oregon. There was a Christine Drazen. You'll recognize the name. She's the Republican because she also ran against Tina Kotek back in 2022. And she was narrowly defeated. And I would actually argue that had there not been a third party candidate in the race, that Christine Drazen would be the governor of the state of Oregon. Instead, Tina Kotek became the governor. You all know about Tina, soft on crime, woke Kotek. And she's done just a horrible job since she's been in office. And much like our governor here, Tina Kotek has been about orange man bad, focusing on the other Washington, virtue signaling, while her state falls to pieces. While unaffordability is through the roof, while homelessness surges, while they get close to Washington state and the lowest number of police officers per capita of any state in the nation. And so Christine Drazen has decided to give it another shot, and she made it past. She got her party's nomination. It sounds like her party's coalescing around her. And for me, why I'm so interested in this race, I mean, I remember being excited when she almost won 3 years ago, 4 years ago now. But I think it's about giving us a little bit of hope that, okay, you have Oregon where I think that there's been 7 Democratic governors in a row, similar situation here in Washington. There are no Republicans in statewide elected office across the entire West Coast. As you guys know, I'm not a Republican, but the need for divided government is crucial. You see what happens when there's not divided government, when there's one party in control of everyone, everything. It's a party that virtue signals above all else, and the whole West Coast has gone to hell. And so I look at this race happening in Oregon, and I'm paying just as close attention to it as I would a race here, because I think that if Christine Drazen can win, that is going to open up the door for some real possibilities and improvement in Washington state and in California. So we are going to have Christine on Sundays with Subscribers this week. We taped the interview with her this morning. Here's part of our conversation that we had. For you as a candidate, are you doing anything strategically different this time around, like lessons learned from the first time?
So many lessons learned. There's just one time that you have a first time doing something, and so many lessons learned. And one of the terrific opportunities we have this time is to really focus on the metro area and spend more time having people really see me in person and ask me the hard questions. Like, let's talk. And I think that people are finding that we have a lot more in common. We have a lot more shared values than they might assume from the ads on television. And so it really has been a complete pivot in this election cycle to be able to have time where I'm really spending it with suburban and urban voters. And in the last race, just the nature of that three-way race, I had a huge Republican primary up until May, and then I had a secondary Republican primary against the non-affiliated candidate in that race that really very much was running a race that was center right instead of running a race that was center left, even though she was a lifelong Democrat. And so that meant I didn't really have the opportunity to be in the urban and suburban parts of the state until the very end of that race. And so I'm introducing myself again, and I'm doing a lot more small rooms, small conversations, and just spending a lot more time across the community. It's been really, really good.
Has there been any issue down there with coalescing the Republican base? It's something that when we had our election up here, Dave Reichert ran against Bob Ferguson, and there was such a rift in the Republican Party. This whole thing was like dead on arrival for them because they just could not get it together. So have you had, or are you continuing to have to try to coalesce the Republican base?
You know, I'm really grateful for my opponents in the Republican primary right after that. And it was a hard fought primary. Right after that primary, the major candidates were willing to come together. We all met. We had lunch with our party leadership, pulled it together, and they all said, we're all in. We've got to defeat Tina Kotek. Like, let's go. And that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen. And so like that, for them to do that, that soon after the race, really just shows the kind of committed Oregonians that they all are, and that they recognize that that the need is so enormous here and the opportunity is so significant that they were willing to do that. And I'm grateful for that. And it has made a huge difference down here.
Yeah, that's a lesson I think we could take. And we've had Ed Deal on the show, and he's, as he says, the real deal. He's a really nice guy. So that doesn't surprise me from him. So I'm glad that you guys are seeing that down there. You know, one of the reasons I really wanted to have you on is people stop me all the time and ask me if there's, you see any hope. Is there any sort of hope on the horizon? Because a lot of people are thinking about leaving, and I'm sure that's the same, you know, in Eastern Oregon. And I saw the headlines about your polling and how close you came last time, and I just thought, well, yeah, I mean, if Oregon can pull it off, and if you do a good job, which I think you would, I think that that kind of gets rid of this concern that voters in these deep blue states have that, oh my gosh, you know, a Republican is going to come in here and do all these horrible things. So I almost feel like no pressure. You sort of have the hopes and the dreams of the West Coast resting on your shoulders.
You know, I honestly don't mind, right? Yeah. Like, I am so deeply committed to the future of my own state that I'd be willing to do this again. I am not at all put off by the fact that it is it's a historic movement that gets this done. That's all that gets it done, is a historic movement. Anything short of that, and we're going to fall short.
Yeah, and we do not want to see her fall short, because I think it's not just about, you know, her getting elected, but then showing what Republican governance looks like, or what just different governance looks like. And if she can get in there and do her job and be successful, then it maybe opens the eyes to some of the vote blue, no matter who crowd that, oh, it isn't so bad. It isn't so bad having someone else in charge once in a while. And then we've got, you know, 2 years out from that where Washingtonians will be selecting a new governor, and maybe it will have rubbed off by then. So I'm very interested in what's happening in Oregon. Christine is going to be our guest on Sundays with Subscribers. We talk about all sorts of policy issues, from what's going on with homelessness, the very horrible police response times and a lack of affordability. Again, many of the same issues that are plaguing cities and states across the West Coast. We look forward to having her on with us. And I encourage you to check out her campaign and see if there's any way, even if you're not living in Oregon, that you can help it. All right, coming up next, do you know who's living in your neighborhood? You better, because the government sure as hell ain't going to tell you. First, our friend Zach Abraham is having another one of his Know Your Risk live webinars coming up. This one's July 23rd, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. And he's going to be talking about market blind spots. Could the market's biggest blind spots be putting your retirement at risk? Investors and advisors are focused on AI, inflation, conflicting headlines. But what if the real risk to your portfolio is something that the market isn't seeing? Join Bulwark Capital, Zach Abraham, for his free Market Blind Spot webinar, July 23rd, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. You can have your questions answered. Zach will give you a rundown of how Bulwark Capital is always looking for opportunities to lower your risk, lower your cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible, because that's what we all want. So sign up for free. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. While you're there, you can follow Zach across all his social media platforms, subscribe to his daily podcast on YouTube, etc. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. All right, let me introduce you to Robert Eugene Lau. He is a level 3 sex offender. If you were to search your local sex offender database and see him, you would learn a couple things. That he was convicted in 1986 of rape in the first degree. He was released on July 9th, 2026, so just 7 days ago. Interesting in his offender details here that it says there will be an online meeting about Lowe. Details on the King County Sheriff's Office Facebook page. And it has a little brief description of what he did. I warn you that what we're going to get into is graphic. So Lau is one of these individuals who was convicted of a serious sex offense. And then when he was released from the Department of Corrections, the state sought to have him civilly committed to the sex offender island. And that's when you know they're bad. Like, this person is so irredeemable, not even after they served, you know, 2 decades in prison, which he did, are we comfortable releasing them out into the community. So he was at the sex offender island for about 10 years or so, civilly committed and released without any restrictions into the community, besides, you know, he has to register as a sex offender, July 9th, 2026. So a little bit about what he did, okay? So again, it's pretty graphic, but I think it's important to understand the type of people who are living amongst us and the fact that it's very difficult to find out any information about them whatsoever. So this is from the court docket regarding the argument over whether he should be civilly committed. So it says, facts of the case. In 1986, appellant Robert Lowe was convicted of first-degree rape and attempted murder of a young woman he picked up in a tavern and left to die on the side of the road after stabbing her repeatedly through her vagina. So he meets a woman at a bar, takes her home, rapes her, stabs her repeatedly in the vagina, throws her on the side of the ditch to die. Thankfully, she survived. He was sentenced to 30 years in prison, which I would argue isn't enough to begin with. 30 years in prison. So he got released in August of 2009 from the Department of Corrections, and that's when the state filed to petition him as a sexually violent predator. And they did find that probable cause existed to give him that SVP designation, and the court remanded him to the custody of the Special Commitment Center. And he also wasn't a... He wasn't a model inmate by any stretch of the imagination. While he was awaiting trial, he assaulted one of his fellow detainees at the Special Commitment Center. He was awaiting, you know, trial and a determination of whether he should still be there. So he wasn't a perfect guy, but he ends up getting released out into the community. And we had a woman who emailed us about it, and she's very frustrated because if we go back to that initial search that she did, it says there'll be an online meeting about this. Details will be on the King County Sheriff's Office Facebook page. So far we haven't seen... And this concerned citizen hasn't been made aware of any sort of meeting for the community for where this guy is going to be and, you know, what kind of threat he poses and what the sheriff's office is going to be requiring of him, if anything. And he's living, by the way, let me give you his address. The 3700 block of Westlake Walker Drive Southeast in Enumclaw, Washington. So this guy who kidnapped a woman or took her from the bar, raped her, stabbed her in the vagina, left her on the side of the road, he's now living in Enumclaw, Washington for the last roughly 8 days. And so far, no sort of community meeting, as was promised. We went through all of this when they were releasing sexually violent predators into less restrictive alternatives in communities. What was the chief concern where those people were being sent? The community had no notice. The community had no ability to sort of, you know, argue about the placement, but also know who's coming here. What steps do I take to increase security for my family, for my children? And that was like the bare minimum that the community wanted. It was like, hey, do us a solid and give us like, you know, ample heads up that you're going to take a guy off the sex offender island who did something this horrific to a woman, and you're going to plop him in the middle of our community. But so far, nothing. And I would also argue, and how many of these are happening that citizens don't find out about it and then email us about it? I would also argue when it says there will be an online meeting about Lowe, details will be on the Facebook page. There should be a meeting about him before he's released. Don't you think? Why have a meeting about him after he's released? There should be a meeting about him before he's released, letting the community know, time and place, you can come, we'll do it virtually, whatever it is. Here's what this guy did. Here's the reason he's being released. And we've had such a hard time trying to get the documents about why he was eventually released, unrestricted from the Predator Island. So we're still working to understand, did the state fight against it? Was there some sort of like, just, oh, we'll let him go, no big deal, because we know Democrats are trying to get people off the Predator Island because they want to close it down and they want all of these people living in your community? But at the very baseline, I get it. People have constitutional rights. You can't just take someone who wasn't sentenced to life in prison and keep them behind bars for their entire life without them having an ability to be rehabilitated and deemed rehabilitated by a court. I understand. I mean, we could have an argument about whether someone like this should be put to death, but that's never going to happen in the state of Washington. But the bare minimum is be a partner for the community. You work for the public. Have a meeting before it happens. Be transparent about the process when you have someone this vile who's going to be placed among families. And this got me really thinking about it, is like, I've never, not once, search the sex offender registry in my neighborhood. Not once. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what if there was someone living near me who met a woman at a bar, raped her, stabbed her in the vagina, and tossed her on the side of the road, and I don't even know it. And so I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, because I'm like, is that just me, or do people do this, and I'm the only one? I asked you in our subscriber show poll, do you proactively, can you put this up, Nicole? Yep. Do you proactively look at sex offender registries to see who might be living in your area? Nicole, have you ever done that?
No.
I have never done that.
I'm going to do it today.
I'm literally going to go home and do it today, because this is like, you can't count on the government. No. Government's not going to tell you these things. Mm-mm. So 75% of you say no. 25% yes. 75% say no. Kathleen says, I guess I've always assumed they live among us. I'm on constant guard. Spear says, no, but I probably should start doing that. Bill says, occasionally. Casey said, I did it in the past when my kids are younger and we live closer to town. I remember how disgusting it was and how many there are out there. Matt said, I don't want to know, as I might feel like I would have to do something about it. I mean, especially if you have kids. Maybe I haven't done it because I don't have kids, right? And it's like, if you've got kids, walk into a bus stop or whatever it is, like, you want to know what predators are living in your community.
I bet a lot of that 75% have kids and still haven't done it.
Well, but but this guy targeted someone, you know, a young woman. So he's just as much a threat. I understand. But he's just like, whether I have kids or not shouldn't matter, because this guy, he clearly, his thing isn't attacking children. Not all sex offenders are, you know, child sex offenders.
Exactly.
Greg says, I get emails from the county sheriff's office periodically. Granton on Locals says, looking at the registries should be something to add to my research. Dan said, only when my sister was moving into a certain area. Seems like something that you do when you move and if you have kids. And frankly, once you look at it, you realize they're everywhere. And that is absolutely true. You know, this isn't Florida where they're going to put these types of predators to death. They're going to let them out someday, but we're going to dig deeper into this. We have requests out for some of the documentation about why he was, you know, civilly committed, and then ultimately they decided they couldn't commit him any further, and to what extent there's been any communication that maybe we didn't see with the public about his placement in Enumclaw. I feel like Enumclaw's been through so much with this. Why? Maybe it's just because we have so many viewers in Enumclaw that we hear about all the nonsense with the sexually violent predators there. Because I hope they're not just dumping them all there, but just absolutely outrageous. All right. A coffee shop, a bikini barista stand, actually, specifically, under fire for its sign about transgender people. We'll discuss in our segment, Unbelievable. All right. Second base espresso.
Perfect. Clever.
Perfect. It's a bikini barista stand. So they have a little like sign board out front and they like to use it.
Mm-hmm.
So
sure do.
The sign on the left, if you're watching, and I'm not going to say the word, says trans women are. The R word, men. Mm-hmm. Trans women are the R word, you know, the word. I should have used that Jay Inslee cut where he says the word.
Oh.
Yes. Oh, I should have used that as a drop. Nicole, go find that.
Finding.
Trans women are R word men, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so people were offended by that, which, you know, the R word, yeah, I think that it's starting to come back into people's lexicon, but maybe not on a sign outside your business, but they clearly know it's going to offend people and they don't care because people are still going to want to see scantily dressed women. And so they're like, I own it. I can do what I want. So they got backlash from the community. So they removed the sign and replaced it with a sign to the right that says, calm your tits. Okay. I kind of love these people because it's like, oh, people are so mad about this. Calm your tits. This from the Spokesman Review. The headline, this does not represent Spokane. Hilliard coffee stand removes transphobic sign using slur that spurred protest and outrage. It says a transphobic sign outside a Hilliard coffee stand that also used a slur for intellectually disabled people has spurred so much online backlash that the sign was removed and a protest is scheduled. Oh no, they're going to protest outside the coffee shop on Sunday. The Bikini Barista coffee stand, Second Base Espresso, put up a sign outside the business earlier this week that says what I said it said. While the word has long been considered a slur to refer to those with mental disabilities, it has seen increased acceptance largely among some conservatives in recent years, including President Donald Trump, who used it in criticizing Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. Yes, President Trump did in fact use that word, but Jay Inslee used it too. It says the sign, clearly visible to drivers on North Haven Street, was gone on Wednesday and replaced with a sign telling readers to calm down, using a vulgar term for breasts. Oh, come on, get over yourselves. The coffee stand is known in the area for displaying offensive and often inappropriate signs. Some signs in the past have referenced sex, genitalia, deportations, or made a mockery of Mexican people. In 2017, the business came under fire for posting a racist sign reading, "Why can't you play Uno with Mexicans? They take all the green cards." That's not racist. That's true. That's true. Okay. What? Right? I mean, technically, who else is taking the green cards?
I know, it's true.
Okay, it's just a joke, people. Calm your tits.
Yeah, exactly.
Says, okay, a woman believed to be the owner, who identified herself as Jenna, declined comment outside the coffee stand Wednesday. The stand is owned by Jenna Ruth Bryan, according to business records. While the offensive signs are not new, this is the first time Hilliard resident L.B. Seaton has seen such a slur, she said. As someone who is openly queer and has special needs child, she said it felt personal. It became personal enough to plan a protest at the coffee stand scheduled for 8 a.m. on Sunday. Nearly 500 people on Facebook have shown interest in attending, and 45 people say they plan to show up. Okay. So apparently they also don't want this stand to have the ability to have signs like this. Look, free speech is sometimes offensive. I don't see. So apparently like the news was reaching out to the mayor's office and people are like, can't you do something about this?
Well, a council member called the police to check to see if there was anything that they could do. Police said no.
Yeah.
And so then they called the mayor and the mayor's like, yeah, it is a First Amendment, right?
And
but they were
the
trying
city,
to figure out a way around
the
it.
The city told people to report it to Washington's hate crimes and biased incidents hotline.
Of course they did.
Of course they did. Mm-hmm. Good God. You know what? It's a bikini barista stand.
If you don't like it, don't look at it.
Yeah. I mean, its existence is vulgar in a sense, but people who want coffee with a little bit of extra go there, and people who don't just like drive by the sign. I agree that the trans women are men, you know,
but that's where we are.
I know
they're being extreme, so people are being extreme back to them.
I'm not necessarily
I'm not advocating for their sign, however. This is where we are.
I know it is.
If you're going to tell boys they can play sports with girls, then we're going to call you the R word.
You're cramming so much dumb stuff down our throats, just acting like we have to accept it or we're bigots. And like, no, we're done with that.
Yep. People have reached their limits.
Yep.
This
reached their limits.
Ridiculous.
And they're acting out in any way they can, even if it's a sign in front of a bikini barista stand. I would
like
love to
lady.
See the city try to do something about it. Yeah, that wouldn't go the way they think that would go. Calm your
cops.
Tits, okay? Calm your tits.
I bet the cops are like, go away.
Yeah. Like, what do you want from us?
What do you want?
What do you want from us? All right. We'll get to national news coming up next. Don't forget, we have a fun little segment to end the show. I'll be quizzing golfers on American history. So I hope you can stick with us to the end. First, 11,000 Washingtonians have taken the First Mark Challenge to try to save money on their insurance. And we hear from so many of you that it's just one of the best phone calls you and your family have ever made, because it's like you need insurance already. You know, it's as opposed to a company that they're just offering insurance from themselves. To have First Mark Insurance go out, shop their market of carriers, come back with their recommendations. And I'll tell you, I mean, they've gone the extra mile. And like, I needed some sort of special kind of insurance for my business that they'd never gotten before. And man, they were like on the phone with Lloyd's of London, like, how do we get this sort of insurance? And they ended up getting it. It's just they're working so hard for you. Local company, they're going to pick up the phone when you call. And they know you and they know your needs and they know what's going on with you and your family. And they're going to be able to help you out. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. I mean, seriously, wouldn't you like to know if you could be paying less? Take the First Mark Challenge today. It costs you nothing. There's no obligation. You'll find out just how much money you could be saving every single month. Don't give your insurance company a free raise. Before you renew, let First Mark review. Go to firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided and let us know how it goes after you take the First Mark Challenge. We'd love to hear from you. All right. I do want to touch on something before we get to Florida Report. There was these stupid online rumors about Nick Shirley. Did you see these?
Yes, these online
idiots were trying to say that Nick Shirley's related to Charlie Kirk's assassin. He's not. And I think X has taken those down. But in case you saw those aren't true. He's not related to Charlie Kirk's assassin. The internet was trying to say they were cousins or something. I was like, the internet has absolutely lost its mind. But so Nick Shirley, of course, the independent journalist who's exposed a lot of fraud in places like Minneapolis and Los Angeles and elsewhere in LA, he says that he has reason to believe that the Chinese and Korean mafia are behind some of the fraud that's been happening.
So in Flushing, Queens, in this area, you have these adult daycares. They're like playdate centers for seniors.
Yeah,
for
so careers. If they don't want to be alone in their house, and they're picked up at their home and taken to this center.
Exactly. And we pay for it. And then right around them, they have all these pharmacies set up. They have all these durable medical equipment companies set up. And it's just like this big racket where they start billing all of these people with these medical beneficiary numbers from these seniors, from these adult daycares. And because they make so much money from Medicaid, they're then able to give kickbacks to the seniors. So you have these Korean and Chinese mafias, quite literally, looting the government from Medicaid and then giving the kickbacks to the seniors.
So wait, the old people get money themselves?
Well, they make so much money, these pharmacies and these adult daycares, that they then have a little referral program set up for these seniors. So it's like, bring in a friend, we'll give you $100.
What can be done to put an end to this? Because this seems like the biggest entrepreneurial activity of certain immigrant classes now. I mean, this is a big business for the immigrant community.
Yeah, it's fraudpreneurship.
Yeah, that's a good word. But he also testified about it in front of Congress, as did James O'Keefe. James O'Keefe actually gave some other independent journalists a shout out for helping with that work, like our friend Jonathan Cho. And it's just amazing that you've got this ragtag group of independent journalists who are going in and they're just taking a look. It's so simple. I keep going over that over and over. They're just knocking on doors. Something the government should be doing, could be doing. It's really not difficult. And you have someone like Nick Shirley, who's like in his, you know, early 20s, who's able to piece together how these schemes are working in a way that now the government could, but the government has chosen not to. Specifically, Democrats have chosen not to. And you'll see where a lot of this widespread fraud is being perpetrated. It's in deep blue areas, and it's being perpetrated by people of color, not all of it, but a lot of it, immigrants, et cetera, immigrant groups, and Democrats are like, can't look into them. And so it's just a perfect storm of criminality, of incompetence, of corruption. And it takes someone like Nick Shirley to point it all out. So thankfully, the feds are now going to look into this accusation that the Chinese and Korean mafia are basically using old people to steal a bunch of money from the government. All right, it is Thursday. That's when we check in on what's happening in the Sunshine State. It is our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
We're unintentionally matchy-matchy today. Look at us. All right. But in all seriousness, Florida at the center of a little bit of controversy. So there's been a national controversy over ICE and traffic stops. There was someone killed in Maine. Although, you know, there's much more to the story than that. But also in Florida, this from the AP, man fleeing immigration officers in Florida is struck and killed by a tractor trailer. So this, you know, I think is one of the things I said initially, we're going to halt these sort of traffic stops. And then the president's like, no, we're not. So what happened here?
So this wasn't exactly a traffic stop. This all occurred when ICE was doing an operation at a gas station. That was well known for illegal immigrants stopping early in the morning before work. I don't know. Not a lot of details have come out around what that operation was for and why these particular people were targeted during it, but it was a car with four men in it. All four of them fled when ICE officers approached them. And one of them took off across a busy street and was unfortunately struck and killed by a tractor trailer.
Yeah, 28 years old. This happened early in the morning. He went across a busy road right into the path of a semi. So has there been a lot of controversy in Florida around this? Or is this one of those, like, don't run from the police into a busy roadway situation?
I think down here you get a lot of both of that. I mean, there was a vigil. I saw some pictures of about 50 people out, you know, putting candles and stuff for this person. Because it is tragic anytime somebody has to lose their life, you know, but... you do get the other half of it that's like, don't run. If you feel enough fear of being deported, then you should have your paperwork in order.
Well, he was a Mexican national.
He was a Mexican national. He was an undocumented immigrant. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think two things can be true. You know, you can see this as a tragedy, but also understand, like, the reality of illegal immigration being running rampant in America. I think you can have two minds about it and still be an empathetic person.
Well, and also this sort of stuff happens with regular law enforcement endeavors. You know, it's like people die fleeing from local cops as well. People are shot in traffic stops with local cops when they drive at local cops. But it's because it's ICE. And people see, you know, the attempt to enforce our nation's immigration laws as a less serious priority. And so they don't think it's worth someone getting killed. And I don't want somebody to die over it. But, you know, whether you flee from a local police officer into traffic and get hit, or you flee from an ICE agent into traffic and get hit, I just don't see those two things as fundamentally different.
Yeah, I don't either. And I think the action of fleeing a law enforcement agent, whether it's ICE or local or federal, is kind of an admission that you know you've done something wrong. So, you know, I think that just comes down to like the reason why they're out here doing these enforcements in the first place, the reason why cops are doing their job. They're looking for people who've done something wrong. Yeah. And, you know, I think people who are in this country illegally might want to see these stories and maybe make their way to the immigration office and get their paperwork in order before this happens to them.
Yeah. All right. Seattle has the highest business vacancy rate in our downtown of any major downtown in the nation. 37% of our office space in downtown is vacant, which is insane. The opposite problem in downtown Miami, where people are filling up the skyscrapers left and right.
Yes. So if anybody's ever been to Miami, we have a ton of skyscrapers. There's not a lot of office space. It's all condos. So there's now this new need for more office space and prefabricated office space for these companies that are coming in ready to start up shop without having to do these huge renovations. So one of the biggest office buildings in Florida just signed four new leases. I think it's like almost 60,000 square feet of lease space they just signed just in the last few months. It's an array of businesses. So you have the Consulate of the United Arab Emirates signed a lease, which I thought was very interesting. Yeah. In CAE, which is a higher education institution out of Latin America, signed a big lease. Darktrace, an AI cybersecurity company. And then Foundever is another company that signed a lease in this particular building, but they're moving from another area of Miami into a bigger office space because they're growing company.
Wow, they're expanding there. We don't have people expanding here. They're like, I gotta go. But yeah, I think Miami has been attracting more and more tech startups and companies over the years because they have made a concerted effort to recruit them to Miami and to show why Miami and Florida are good places for them. So this is not a surprise. I mean, when you have a 37% vacancy rate, those businesses went somewhere. Some of them might have went out of business, but by and large, some of them might have said, you know, now we're work from home or whatever, but they went somewhere. That's millions of square feet of office space just empty is insane. All right. So, of course, we have a horrible homelessness crisis here, and there are homeless people in Florida, you know, just not to the extent, I suppose. So we're always looking for what is the best way to deal with this, you know, and I think we have a lot of charities in Washington state that could and should be helping the needy and dealing with that and getting the government out of it, I think is actually a really good path forward. Not out entirely, obviously, but we've seen that the government can't deal with it and they just waste a bunch of money. So tell me about this new affordable housing community in Tampa, which is pretty unique.
Yeah. So it's It's funded almost entirely by the Catholic Charities Diocese of St. Petersburg. And I kind of went down a rabbit hole looking into this charity. They do a lot of really amazing work. This new housing unit that they just opened adds on to the almost 2,000 affordable housing units that they have funded along with the city of Tampa in Tampa. So they just opened a new 15-unit building that used to be part of their office building. So they decided it could be used better as affordable housing for people who are either experiencing homelessness or about to experience homelessness.
Yeah, I think that is a key, because it says, you know, low income, but people who are nearing homelessness, right on. If you can stop them from becoming homeless, I mean, that saves the taxpayers so much money. And so being that stopgap.
Absolutely. And there is requirements. I mean, there's the low income requirements. If you're somebody who's getting to a point where, like, I can't afford the rent, because the rent in any Florida city is almost unaffordable for even people who are working full-time jobs. Yeah. So there's that aspect of it. There's also another level to this where this same charity provides tents that are more outfitted for people who are trying to get work. So say you're homeless and you just need something a little more stable than tents in the woods to get ready for work, get to work. So they provide a tent on a wooden platform. They offer you outreach to go get showers cleaned up so that you can get a job, maintain a job, and then step up to this next level of housing that they've created that are actually really nice little apartments.
Yeah, they are. And they're spacious and they feel, I think, you know, some of the ones that they make here, you know, are these little shoe boxes. And I'm not opposed to that, right? But if you are actually making the effort, getting the treatment you need and doing these things, I think having a little bit of dignity with that is really important. And I think that these units feel a lot more like, oh, I'm on my way out of homelessness.
Yeah, they're beautiful. I mean, I think that the one that I saw was almost nicer than one of my first apartments here living in Miami. But based on your situation and your qualifications, the rent is anywhere from a couple hundred dollars a month to no more than $1,000 a month. So it really is a great opportunity for people that are kind of on that gap of whether they're coming out of homelessness or risking going in, that they can still maintain, like you said, a life of dignity, go to work, have a place to come home, a kitchen, a bathroom, and take care of themselves like a human being.
And the key is that accountability aspect that's required of them. Here, they just turn into de facto drug dens.
Yeah. And I think because there is still a rent requirement on these affordable units, like that will keep you in this position of like having to like step up, go to work, make pay bills, and get used to kind of like living like a more structured lifestyle. And this is great because the charity itself donates almost 50% of the money to make this happen. And then the city and the county come in and kind of fund the difference. So it does take a lot of the burden off the taxpayers, I think, in that aspect, when you have this organization that's raising so much money and their number one mission is to help people. So I loved seeing that. It was a really great story to read today.
Yeah, we do have, you know, churches and religious organizations here who do step up, and I don't want to act like they don't. Nothing really to this extent, you know, providing shelter, emergency shelter space, a common thing like the Union Gospel Mission, you know, but I think when you're spending your own money by and large, you also get to decide the terms. And like you said, like, yeah, we have this unit for you, but you do have to pay a little bit of rent, which means you're going to have to get a job. You're going to have to get treatment and all of these things. That's the only way to do it. So, all right, absolutely. Miranda, my Jean twin, thank you so much.
Denim twins. Bye.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Okay, let's get to comments that we missed comments that were from the live stream. Mm-hmm. I can't talk or what? Jeez, thunderstorms got me all out of whack. Weird. On stopping left-wing terrorism, Necrotushu says the left are going to be so pissed that Republicans will elect the first Latino president. I know that it's like,
it's true.
Oh, no, that's not the kind of Latino we wanted. Mm-hmm, yes.
Mm-hmm. From Anne, sorry. Rubio is on spot. That was so well said.
Spot on.
What did I say?
On spot.
On spot.
know,
discombobulated in there.
On a Republican leading in the Oregon governor's race, Rick Mick, it would be nice to take back Washington and Oregon. Yeah. And if can Oregon can do it first, by all means. And I don't even, again, it's not about a political party for me. It's about what they're doing isn't working very clearly. So let's try something else. On the sex offender who is now living in Enumclaw, Nitro Hank Tours America suggests
the wood chipper.
You know, being from Fargo area, wood chippers are handy.
We get it.
Quite handy. Chris Lundstrom. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. From Chris, Scarlet Letter, these guys in the Gen Pop. Wow. It's okay. I'm really struggling today.
It's fine.
But in the Gen Pop, let the inmates have Adam instead of hiding them.
Yeah. Let's get these guys known in Gen Pop before they get out. That'll take care of it. Let's see. Cindy Essick. So sick and tired of them releasing these sex predators into our communities. Yeah.
From Little Miss J. I'm a school bus driver. I try to look these areas up that I cover. It is absolutely dangerous out there, and so few know about it.
That's very responsible as a school bus driver.
That's a good idea. Yeah. I mean, as far as just on the lookout for certain faces.
Yeah, for sure.
Not a bad idea.
On Florida Report, Def Pa says that poor semi driver has to live with that memory. Yeah, I mean, I do feel bad for, obviously, the guy who was killed and his family, but you ran from police, and now a semi truck driver is like, my dad hit and killed someone once who was committing suicide. It was a homeless man, and it was like literally my dad and a cop were on, you know, the only two lanes of the road, and this guy right in front of the cop like decided to end his life and used my dad to do it. My dad was like haunted
by it.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Nanook of the North.
Where are we? Oh, pro business. Yeah. Nanook from the North. Of the North. Pro-business cities don't have the issues filling, filling office space. High-tax, anti-business cities, Seattle, like Seattle, do lower taxes and watch the office buildings fill up again.
Yeah, I mean, that's just common sense. There's a freaking reason, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Matthew Cook, rules and goals so that you can reclaim your life. This is how you do it. Right. It's like, we don't want these people to be homeless forever and to die on the streets, but you have to have rules. You have to have some sort of goal that they're working toward. And it's like, come on.
I also think
obvious.
You just need people that believe in you, people that you know care. I mean, it's a whole, they need the support.
Yes, 100%. So. All right.
It's not even controversial.
We're not going back to that.
It's fine. It's the thunderstorm.
Powerful it's really, today.
We were doing that interview with Christine Drazen earlier, and in the middle of it, like, it is shaking in here. It's like,
it took you off the screen for a second.
Yes, and our cameras went down for a second. Yeah. And then they popped back up, and I was like, oh my gosh. All right, so revisiting that coffee sign story in our comments. The coffee sign that said, trans women are...
Retarded.
Jay Inslee said it.
Not us.
Not us. Nicholas says, this coffee shop is awesome. RM Com said, there's a massive fatigue with manufactured outrage. And I think that's why it's like, you're going to get offended no matter what. And do I think the R word is offensive? I do. I know it's making a comeback, but, you know, I understand why people are offended by that. If it said trans women are men, like, I'm totally fine with that. I don't know if you had to throw, what's the word again?
Retarded.
I don't know if you had to put that on the sign, but I think people are so sick the manufactured outrage, they just want to test it. And they're just like, I don't care, I'll say anything.
And you know what? If they would have just kept driving, it wouldn't be on our show today. It wouldn't be in the papers across the state.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be on the news.
Yes, I agree.
But way to give it some more attention. Now she's probably doing good business.
Oh, I'm sure. First of all, one thing. This protest is going to be at 8 a.m. on a Sunday. Like, those people aren't waking up at 8 a.m. I mean, the geriatrics will.
Yeah.
But like the dangerous ones, they're sleeping. They're sleeping. All right. We have a fun closing sanity check for you. First, if you are thinking about selling your home, our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com is the guy you want to talk to just get a lay of the land. You've probably been hearing about all the listings that have been going up and, you know, some of them sitting for a little while. Well, that's probably because they're not working with Wes Jones, because Wes and his team have a strategy for this. And that's what they can talk you through. You know, a lot of it has to do with how the home home is marketed, how the home is staged. You, with all the listings, yours has to stand out. And when you look at his website, you'll see how fantastic their marketing is. And it's not enough to like make it look good on a listing. And then people walk in the house and they're like, what the hell? This doesn't look like a listing. That's not it. It's about also cosmetic upgrades you're going to get your money out of that are going to make your home stand out. And that's really what's going to help home sellers in this market. So sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, we had a lot of fun on Monday of this week supporting a charity we care an awful lot about, the Snohomish County Canine Foundation. They do a couple annual events, and one of them is a golf tournament to benefit the Canine Foundation, the paws that enforce the laws. So Undivided sponsored hole number 4 at the golf tournament. So Nicole and I were out there for the day, and I decided that it was a good opportunity to quiz these golfers on their knowledge of American history.
You guys aren't from ice, are you?
It's Brandy Cruz. We're at the Mill Creek Country Club for the annual Snohomish County Canine Foundation charity golf tournament.
Oh, Steven.
Undivided is sponsoring hole number 4. We're going to be asking golfers questions about the United States of America, taken from the U.S. citizenship exam.
Thank you so much for your help. We're all going to get tariffs. Tariffs for everybody. The American people will be just fine.
Beautiful.
What is the name of the current Vice President of the United States?
J.D. Vance.
There you go.
Thank God.
That was a real layup.
Wow.
What did the Emancipation Proclamation do?
Free the slaves.
Who did it emancipate?
The slaves?
Yes. Yeah. 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 I think you knew. Yeah. I just didn't want to say it. Name the U.S. war that was fought between the North and the South.
Civil War.
Why does the U.S. flag have 13 stripes?
Oh, the original colonies.
Get over there. Name 3 national U.S. holidays.
4th of July.
It's a really safe one. Yes.
Memorial Day. Yes. Veterans Day.
Good job, buddy. What war did the Americans fight to win independence from Britain?
The Revolutionary War.
There it is. Right, who's my next victim? I'll let you choose if you want easy, medium, or hard.
Definitely easy.
You want easy or hard?
Just give me a layup.
Oh. Okay. Let's give them the hard ones. I'll take the easy ones.
You want an easy one.
Let's go with easy because I feel like I'm on the spot.
Name one war fought by the United States in the 1900s.
Spanish-American War?
1900s.
Oh, 1900s, Civil War.
1900s.
Oh, 1900s. I was thinking 1800s. World War II, World War I.
There you go. Who was the United States' main rival during the Cold War?
Cuba.
Who was the United States' main rival during the Cold War?
Soviet Union.
Hey, give me the hardest one.
How many amendments to the United States Constitution are there?
14.
That's not even close.
I was going to say 28.
That's close.
Oh, okay.
27. There were 13 original states. Can you name 2 of them?
Pennsylvania and Maine.
Not Maine.
Oh, my.
Massachusetts.
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia.
Connecticut.
There were 13 original states. Can you name 2 of them?
Maine and Massachusetts.
Do you know how long a term is for the House of Representatives?
Short.
3. 2. There it is. How long is a term for a United States senator?
2 years?
Try again.
4.
Try again.
Unlimited.
I went to public school.
What do you want, Goose?
Is the commander-in-chief of the U.S. military.
He hates that.
No.
Oh.
Who is the ultimate commander-in-chief?
Trump.
There it is. Yeah, okay. Okay. All right.
I was like, Pete is commander of war or whatever.
Who is the commander-in-chief
of the U.S. military.
PXF?
No, that's close. The commander-in-chief.
Commander-in-chief. So, Donald Trump?
Yes. Who is the commander-in-chief of the U.S. military?
President Trump?
President Trump. Can you name one of your United States senators? There are two.
In Washington State?
In Washington State. I'll give you a first name. Try to give me the last. Senator Patty
Murray.
The nation's first motto was E Pluribus Unum. What does that mean?
Out of many, become one. Is that it?
That's the hardest one we had in here.
Okay.
That's it. Got it. E Pluribus Unum. What does it mean?
Is that all for one?
Yeah, that's close enough. Out of many, one.
Out of many is one.
Out of many, one. That counts, though. What territory, now a state, did the United States buy from France in 1803?
Louisiana.
All right. The Trump administration, in the middle of the night, snatched the dictator of what socialist nation?
Venezuela.
Nailed it, you guys.
Nice work.
Thank you.
In the White House, there's a wall of pictures depicting every American president, except one. Joe Biden's picture has been replaced with a picture of what?
The secretarial.
The auto pen. Good. Yes. Yeah, the image of Joe Biden has been replaced with a picture of
an auto pen.
Except Joe Biden, whose picture has been replaced with a picture of what?
A monkey.
Is that what you want?
Your sister's calling you.
Okay, just hang up on her.
Brandi Krause, right?
Cruz.
Okay.
If you listen to my show, you're going to get it.
Not all of it.
She's a fan of Undivided.
I just started.
You just started.
Okay.
Oh, what is it? Watch the show for a year, you'll be able to answer all these questions easily, okay? Who is the governor of Washington State?
Oh, God. Ben Ferguson.
Close enough, really.
Bob.
We had an awful lot of fun. Again, all good fun for a good cause, the Snohomish County Canine Foundation. I was really lenient. I saw some people saying that in the comments. We saw maybe 140 golfers throughout the day. There was only two who I would not allow to put their name in the drawing for this big America prize because I gave them so many chances. They couldn't get anything right. So I was like, no, you don't deserve this. We put together this awesome prize pack of like this America 250 Yeti cooler, the Constitution, all these 1776 Titleist balls, which someone added for us, and just like all this cool stuff. And so it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. Faith in humanity. Ooh.
I know you made them look good.
Did I? No, I don't think so. I mean, we had some really smart ones, but the U.S. citizenship exam isn't that hard. There are a couple questions that I didn't include because I'm like, I'm not trying to embarrass people. It's a charity event, you know, but we had a really good time. So thank you for being here. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. If you'd like to support our show, we would love for you to do so. It's how this show exists, is brave Washingtonians and Americans who sacrifice $5 of their hard-earned money every month to help make the show possible. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. We will have Christine Drazen's full interview on Sundays with subscribers, talking about what she's doing to try to capture the governor's office in Oregon and whether it can set an example for Washington and for California. So subscribers will see you Sunday. The rest of you will see you Monday on the live show. Survive that thunder. Thunder. No? Okay, I'll sing by myself then. Fine.